in a way no other radio station can. So call us at 1-877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm. And as Annette said, sweetening the deal. Here, I'm just going to open up the book and see what my hand
lands
on.
We have a lot of musical gifts here.
Yeah. Bluegrass Jam Band. Who is this? The Infamous String Dusters. Thursday, January 24th, for a minimum donation of $60.
And we definitely appreciate all the folks who are donating these tickets to us. Also, if you're a bluegrass band, another one, Infamous String Dusters, Wonder Ballroom, that's $60. We have Jacob Banks, who is a singer-songwriter. He's coming up on January the 15th, also at the Wonder Ballroom. You can have your pair of tickets for $60 on that one. And if you like experimental rock, James Blake, March 8th, Roseland Theater, minimum donation $120 for that pair of tickets.
All right, so go ahead and call us at 1-877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm. Thank you.
Thank you.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by New Cascadia Traditional, located at 1700 Southeast 6th Avenue. New Cascadia Traditional is open daily and provides a wide variety of bread with gluten-free options. Lunch was provided by Blackbird Pizza, located at 1935 Southeast Hawthorne Street, and open from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily. Blackbird also has a second location in North Portland, located at 6214 North Interstate, which is open till midnight every day. Dinner was provided by Russell Street Barbecue, located at 325 Northeast Russell Street. Russell Street Barbecue is a local woman-owned barbecue restaurant that has been in Northeast Portland for going on 16 years. Last year, they opened a second location at 42nd and Southeast Belmont Street. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a Holiday Bazaar, a fundraiser for the Sexual Assault Resource Center on Sunday, December 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Siren Theater in Portland. A Holiday Bazaar will feature tarot readings, slumber prov, improv inspired by slumber party era stories of kids touching the mystical realms, demonstrations, raffles, and more. Again, that's A Holiday Bazaar, a fundraiser for the Sexual Assault Resource Center, on Sunday, December 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Siren Theater, 315 Northwest Davis Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Welcome, dear listeners, to Preference. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hedda. It's an honor to be here. It's a pledge drive week, so we're going to hear from some folks about how you can become a member or increase your membership pledge to keep us on the air and keep us growing. This is a community radio station, and you are our community. We have Matthew Charles Cardinale on the telephone. Matthew, can you hear us?
Hi, Alan. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's just been a great month so far. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I just had a long, busy day. I went to two committee meetings over at Atlanta City Council, followed by the neighborhood planning unit meeting for my community. So, been on my toes.
Wonderful. Now, you were in Portland for a while. Tell us a little bit about what you were working on here in the Wet Rose City.
Well, and of course I miss Portland. I lived in Portland basically for the calendar year of 2016, and I did a little visiting at Lewis and Clark Law School. I finally finished my law degree just a few months ago. I did a little stint at Multnomah County Law Department, and then I really focused a lot of my advocacy work around Multnomah County, and I was for several months, I was actually going to just about every Multnomah County Commission meeting, talking about the need for asking the state for permission for rent control, and speaking about a number of the issues related to affordable housing and homelessness, and got involved in a little nightmare called the Citizens Involvement Commission and the Budget Advisory Committees, which resulted in litigation that's actually still ongoing. I'm not even a party to it, but there was a lot of issues related to this wonderful body that independent body that we have, the Citizens Budget Advisory Commission and the Citizen Involvement Commission, and Deborah Kefouri and others were really trying to eliminate their independence and kind of politically maneuver their way into controlling what was supposed to be an independent body, and that's still going on today. Here we are almost 2 years later.
Well, it's certainly been a trend in the city for quite some time. The Development Commission chopped out citizen participation committees, 7-8 years ago. Came back to bite them in the rear end, so we're glad about that. But the city hasn't learned a lesson, and as I understand it, the mayor continues to whittle away, and of course the Citizens Committee, the Oversight Committee with the Police Department and the arrangement with the federal government about citizen oversight, that collapsed, and I think they're starting over. So
and it's just like, I don't know, it's so weird. It's so tight on public comment too at your city hall. I mean, they really try to compartmentalize and limit what people can say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that our fine mayor, Mr. Wheeler, made his intentions clear the day after the election when he sent out a press release, a statement saying that he would take care of Trump for us and we should just go out and schmooze our neighbors. That was the only thing he had to say to us, is he's the adult in the room, and the rest of us shouldn't worry about politics, shouldn't be involved, shouldn't bother. And I think that attitude has carried through in so much of what he's done in I think betraying Portlanders. You know, I don't think he considers us to be his constituency.
Anyway, So I made the decision to come back to Atlanta is what I did. And I already had, you know, I run an online publication called Atlanta Progressive News. I already had a lot of victories, litigation victories, policy victories, all progressive independent victories for the people. And I just felt like, you know, here I am in my mid-30s. You know, do I want to learn new people and develop new relationships? And, you know, like, no, I'm too, no. You know what? I don't have the, maybe 10 years ago, but I don't have the energy for that. So I came back to the South and I'm like, you know, I can make a difference in the South. You know, we have so much work to do in the South. And so here I am. I've been back. I've gotten a lot of progressive legislation passed Atlanta City Council, and I'm now running for Atlanta City Council in a special election that will be held in March of 2019.
That's wonderful. Let's jump back, and then we'll come back to the city council race. I followed some of the housing advocacy work you've been doing in Atlanta. Tell us a little bit more about that. This city can use as much, you know, as many models.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually kind of interesting, the similarities between, you know, a Portland, a Seattle, Atlanta. I mean, it's all really kind of the same, as progressive as, you know, Portland is on so many things, you know, housing policy has not, you know, really been one of those areas. So, you know, the fight to produce affordable housing that's actually appropriately priced for, you know, the people who need it. And they love to develop so-called affordable housing that's affordable slightly below market, you know, at 80% of the median income. So, you know, oh, you know, we want, and they call it workforce housing. So they say, oh, this is for our teachers and our firefighters. And okay, but what about somebody, you know, working at Target? I mean, you know, here, I mean, we still have, you know, federal minimum wage is our state minimum wage, you know, so people are, you know, there are people, you know, still making just over $7 an hour. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's a huge problem here, but we still have the same type of constraints with our legislature, you know. Now, I was living in Spokane, going to Gonzaga Law School, at the time that in Seattle, Shama Sawant introduced her rent control resolution, and I went to Seattle for that town hall meeting, and you know, it was just kind of amazing, all of the like white collar people who were showing up demanding rent control, because, you know, I mean, Seattle, it's just like it's gone so far. Then Seattle asked, you know, the state for permission to do rent control. So a similar thing was going on with Multnomah County, and some of the housing activists in Portland, and I believe it was April of 16, went to Multnomah County, and you know, were asking them, and it was like, oh, we don't even, you know, I'm trying to remember, was it some type of emergency rent control, I think they wanted. Whatever it was, they felt that they there was absolutely nothing. There was absolutely nothing that they could do. They didn't want to do the emergency rent control, and so, you know, it's still within a state preemption issues. And so in Atlanta, some of the things that I've done, I worked with Atlanta on a surplus property policy. They just had a ton of parcels that they miscellaneously collected over the years, and to require that they, if feasible, use them to develop affordable housing, and that it be prioritized for 0 to 30% of the area median income, followed by 30 to 50%. I'm working on a height bonus policy, which is like an inclusionary zoning. Mm-hmm. We tend to just give height away for free, but we should be making demands with height. And we created a trust fund, an affordable housing trust fund. I also have a policy that we put in place here in Atlanta called affordable housing impact statements, which is actually procedural, but I think really important, that every time we consider a policy decision, whether it's a land use, zoning, a funding decision, or anything that would impact our affordable housing stock, that we have an impact statement, much like an environmental impact statement, to understand how many units would be added, subtracted, or preserved at each income bracket. And in addition, that we actually have an inventory of our affordable housing stock to help us understand what our unmet need is, because we can't really rely on census data to really do that for several reasons. But I've gotten a lot done here in Atlanta for that. I've basically started coming up with ideas, and then after many years of going down there and yelling at them and criticizing them and scoring them and grading them and sometimes singing and rapping at them, I was like, wait a second, I'm just going to draft this for them. And I found out that when they don't actually have to do the work, it actually can get passed.
Matthew, I hate to cut you off, but we need to chat with Guinevere about KBOO memberships. What we're going to do, come back and talk with you after the new year and give folks an update on your city council race and how folks can participate and what you're aiming to do. We're very excited. How does that?
You, and good luck with the pledge drive.
Thank you so much. Guinevere, are you ready to talk with us?
I am here, Alan.
Wonderful.
So welcome to KBOO, KBOO. We're listening to Preference with Alan Silver. Alan's been putting this show on for quite a while. He's a volunteer. He's putting this on and using the radio station equipment, and that's all supported by your donations. So we're doing our fall fundraiser, and we have an amount we would like to raise to keep the station going. Every little bit helps. We are at KBOO, and the phone number to call for donations is 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. So we have a lot of things here that are gifts to go along with donations. We have hoodies and t-shirts, and we have a lot of music events to go attend. We have tickets to go to those. So give us a call or go online at kboo.fm and click donate. That's a great way to do it. Some of the events that we have that you have tickets to is ALO. This is a jam band rock. This is at the Wonder Ballroom in March. The donation for that is $75. And if you work that out monthly, it's somewhere around $7 a month, something like that. And you have your options to put in when you call or when you go online, a monthly amount is great. A small amount, $5, $10 a month adds up to a lot per year. You know, $5 a month is $60 a year. It's a great amount to donate. You know, good place to start. And we're also happy to get, you know, single amount donations, one-time donations. Those work. You can give us a call, and you can put it on your credit card or any of the other kinds of ways that we have for you to do a donation. Some of the other tickets that we have are, I believe it's Auntie Ballas. This is an event at the Star Theater, also in March. We have two pairs of those tickets. That's a minimum donation of $60, which we get back to. That's $5 a month. We have... this event is called Beirut. It's at Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. This is rock music. We have one pair of tickets to that. That's $90. And that can be a one-time donation, or you can break it up into monthly donations, monthly amounts. I was just looking to see how much that is per month, but I don't see that right off the bat. We have Bombino. This is at the Star Theater, also in March. Two sets of tickets for that. So we have a lot of tickets here, and it just goes on and on that different venues around town have donated these tickets to help out with the pitch drive for the fundraiser, and it's all helping, you know, the station stay alive. It's community support. So give us a call at 877-500-5266, KBOO.FM online, and click the donate button. Every little bit helps. Thank you.
Thanks, Guinevere, for giving us a rundown. Thanks, Guinevere. I also want to thank Somia for making radio happen for all of us. Somia's in the booth tonight, keeping us all on time and track. So thanks to both. I want to play a piece for you. I played it a few weeks ago, and I just think it's really important. We have a new host, fairly new host, Alyssa Pariah. Perhaps you know her from housing advocacy in town, perhaps something else. Very wonderful person. And she put a piece on the web called How Do We End Trans Oppression? And I just think it's a piece that deserves an airing. So we're going to play that for you now. And Alyssa's show, by the way, is Friday evenings. It's called The Struggle. So wonderful program. So check that out.
The Trump administration is moving to exclude transgender people from civil rights protection, defining gender as either male or female, unchangeable, and determined by genitals that a person is born with. From the New York Times today. Okay. I just got home from a reading group where we were slated to discuss an article about gender theory, a scholarly article. And we didn't. We mostly discussed this issue and the New York Times article that most of the people there had read. And just about everyone at the meeting was explicitly pro-trans liberation, you know, all socialist feminists. And this question came up about the fight back now and in the future and I was having a hard time in the discussion for many reasons. One, I'm trans. I have a history of abuse and alienation because of being trans, and it hits home. But also because what sometimes, often actually, gets put forward as the way to fight back and sort of how to address these reactionary views and actions from on high. Now, without characterizing what other people say, I'll just say that there was debate. And that's good, you know, don't be afraid of conflict, y'all. I think that the reason on the question of why, I don't know if it's, you know, naked bigotry for the sake of bigotry, but Trump has not, cannot, will not deliver on his promises to his base. You know, making America great again, we assume means you will be in a better position to be able to take care of yourself and your family. And that's not happening. And it won't happen. So, you offer some red meat to the dogs barking. There's a dog barking outside. His base is also, generally, you know, transphobic. They don't like trans people. And I'm going to say why I make that distinction in a minute. So if he cannot and will not start to deliver on the MAGA promises, what he can do is make an attack like this. He's done it before. I'll link the last time that he did something like this, where it was a question about protecting transgender children in public school under Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, so that they would not use the bathrooms that they need and deserve in order to feel safe. So this is not the first time. But what this does is it shores up support. So he may not be able to deliver on what he promised you economically or on other wider social issues, but what he can do is make a naked attack against transgender people. And that might actually make some of his base happy and shore up their support over the long term. I think this is the primary reason why this is happening right now. It shows that he can't deliver on things that he hoped to and that his base hoped to. Now, I'm afraid that we're going to continue to see these attacks over and over again. We're going to sort of circle the drain. Every time I think about these attacks, I see a drain in a tub, you know, taking water down and the futility of sort of every time, you know, the outrage until we calm down and forget, and then he does something else and our attention is diverted there and we have like the memory of goldfish here. I don't say that to say don't fight, don't get out in the streets, don't express your outrage and do work. Because I say the opposite. I say, please do. There was a demonstration in New York City today in Union Square. I'm in Portland, Oregon. There was one in Union Square, and people, you know, made an attempt to sort of, you know, have an answer to what was happening today and to show their outrage. And that's good. And I say, do it. If I was in New York, I would be there with you. And if I had the capacity, I would have done something out here in Portland today. But I didn't have the capacity and nothing was called for. If you have any capacity, get in touch with me. I need comrades to help me with this. So, yes, you know, get outraged and get in the streets. And I hope that we get a little bit more honest about what it's going to take to end trans oppression. in the group when we were thinking about this collectively, and there were about a dozen of us, we were sort of throwing darts at this and trying to think about it collectively, which I suggest everyone does, by the way. You know, be in comradeship with other people and think things out as a group. Anyway, I said, well, the refusal to assert and fight for basic human rights being fulfilled, upheld, prioritized, and seen is what gets us this. Everybody doesn't have a house, food, healthcare, education. In fact, like, they are growing increasingly rare. Because in the U.S., right, I'm from Oregon, there's no political vehicle that's meaningful, serious, and powerful to be able to say every human being, because they're born and they're breathing, deserves these things. And the point of our society should be to see those through for everyone. That's not on offer. And I think that's very important to note. We don't have a vehicle. I would say we need a political party, one that's independent and one that puts these fights for universal human rights at the center. But I don't want to turn this whole thing into a, you know, Trotskyist diatribe, and so I'll spare you. I'll say that, and I said this in the meeting as well. It was a 2-hour meeting and only 12 of us, so I raised my hand about 3 or 4 times. Anyway, that we should pay attention to what the right wing, Trump's base, what they have to say about this today. They're gloating. They're very happy. Go on Twitter, look, and read what these people have to say. Pay attention to what their talking points are. How are their ideas animated? How is it that they are getting an echo? And I say this often, and I'll say it here too. The right gets an echo because the left leaves the vacuum. Because the right is increasingly taking on more extremist contours, more unapologetically inhumane points of view that are unapologetically reactionary, and we don't really see that being mirrored in the Democrat Party. They still unapologetically advocate for corporations to do well, right, and for the rich to be able to stay rich, that the American dream is a possibility, and work hard, and you know, through true grit you'll make it, and we're not going to fight for welfare, we're not going to fight for a universe. Anyway, if we pay attention to where the right sort of comes from on this question of trans stuff, up to Ben Shapiro last night. I went to sleep listening to his podcast, and I didn't have nightmares, I don't think, but anyway, it's because I think we should pay attention. This is a popular figure. He gets an echo. I need to listen to him to be able to get a feel for how it is that he's able to capture people's imaginations the way that he does. And he says about transphobia, or the accusation of transphobia, I'm not transphobic. And he does wordplay, and this is something that, you know, like other people like him will do. I'm not phobic. I'm not afraid of trans people. In fact, I don't even care if you're trans. Go for it. It's not my business. But don't assert that you are owed special rights and protections. The rest of us should not be on the hook for giving you the kind of dignity that you feel that you need and deserve. And that gets an echo. People hear that and they say, yeah, I'm suffering, I'm struggling, I can't pay all my bills, I can't do what I want to do, I don't have special protections, so why should these people? And then they go down the list of all of the ways that trans people, you know, sort of fail morally and, you know, whatever it is, you know, that they do to justify this point of view. But the people who are fighting against that are not exactly champions of people's human rights and dignity being upheld and centered, and people having everything that they need. That's not at the center of their political project. So I feel like we will continue to sort of do this strange sort of bickering with one another, because we have imagined scarcity, that there's not enough resources to go around. So somebody has to starve. Somebody has to die of exposure. Somebody has to fill up the prisons. And as long as it ain't me, then I'm good. And I'll go along with the status quo until it does affect me. And that's a losing strategy. An injury to one is an injury to all. It's the old IWW phrase. And because that is not a popular notion that people know and believe in their hearts, it is generally understood as okay if you don't believe and fight for a political program that would see that everyone gets their needs met and that everyone can feel safe and secure. And I feel like while I'm very happy to fight for trans issues, I will be in the streets. I will be screaming. I will be getting people to sign petitions. I'll be speaking at city council. I'll sit on panels. I'll go to conferences, so on and so on and so on. I'll be there every step of the way. But I think it's important for us to keep in mind what it's going to take in order to actually upend this brutality all around us. And I feel like as long as we continue to tinker with this push toward rights, privileges, you know, treatment, attitudes, I feel like, again, we're circling the drain. It's not that it's without merit, but I just don't think that that's going to be what sees us to victory. So I hope that people can speak and think a little bit more expansively in terms of what it's going to take to get and secure the end of trans oppression. Okay? Thanks.
That was Alyssa Pariah, host of the Friday night KBOO program, The Struggle. Please tune in and find out what kinds of conversations she's having with folks who are doing great work locally. We have Guinevere with us.
Hi, Alan.
Hi there.
Yeah, that was just amazing, wasn't it?
She really knows how to bring things together.
She really does.
And bring them to folks, I think, in a way that speaks to both the heart and the mind.
Yeah, and she's really just, you know, she's very clear in how she's speaking, and she's, you know, just putting it forth like everybody can understand this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not difficult, and it's not so radical of a thing that we're all together here on the planet.
Yes, I think Alyssa might be the person who makes Marxism, the person I know who makes Marxism personal, I think. Something that I can feel rather than just think.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about what we're doing tonight. We are in our fundraiser, mm-hmm. our holiday fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
You can call us online at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. and hit the donate button.
Wonderful.
There's a bunch of different ways to donate, different amounts to donate, and every bit helps. So, Alan, tell us about how long KBOO's been around.
50 years. We celebrated our 50-year anniversary this year with all sorts of great events. And it's been a wonderful ride. Just so much great programming over the years. And with your help, dear listeners, we can continue to make great radio for decades to come. Although we want to start now with your help.
Absolutely. We have, we have different things that are gifts, are thank yous for donating in different amounts. There's $5, $10, $25 a month. $25 a month is a beautiful hoodie. We also have some tickets available. I know I read off some of these, but these are great tickets. Here's one, Garage à Toi. That's a jazz group at the Star Theater. That's a minimum donation of $75. So there's all kinds of these kind of things going on, and we are really just urging and asking you to call to keep supporting KBOO, to keep supporting our community here, the work that we're all doing. And this community radio, you can come in and you can have a tour, you can be around. This isn't just something you hear and you never get to see it. You can actually come here and you can see the building, you can see all of the equipment, you can see all the people buzzing around all day long, helping to support the station and giving us all a voice out into the community.
Yeah, and one of the things that listener contributions and volunteer participation at the station make possible is the Queer Boo Hour. We're here every Tuesday. We take turns with preference tonight and next week transpositive. And so that this is just one of the many pieces of programming we offer. This has been the Queer Boo slot for many years, actually. I remember hearing programming at this hour at my drive time when I used to drive out to Beaverton. And I haven't driven an automobile in a dozen years, so that was a while ago.
You're going to go on the air, Alan. I'm going to say, give us a call, 877-500-5266.
Wonderful. And if folks could hear those calls, please join in. Please, please, please. Thank you so much. Thanks, Guinevere. We'll chat with you again in just a little bit. Sasha, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone. This is Sasha Buchert, former Queer Boo program host. And now staff attorney with Lambda Legal in D.C. What else do you want to tell us about who you are? And you are a KBOO member.
I am. Well, a little embarrassed to admit this, but my membership has lapsed. So I think after we talk, maybe you can transfer me back over to the fundraising folks and get me going again.
We would love to.
Be a shameless plug, but KBOO is wonderful. It's been it was a big part of my life, when I started working at the radio as a volunteer, and it taught me so much. I got to do the news with Janka for a while and got to host Out Loud, and it was definitely a wonderful experience. And the programming is so unique. I've had the chance to live in a couple of other parts of the country since I left Portland, and I keep the app handy because the kind of content that you get is definitely unique and special. So I hope folks recognize what we have, what you all have, and what we all have. We're all part of the community, even when we're not living in Portland. So it's just a wonderful place. So hopefully everybody can step up and make sure that we're all are helping support our community.
Thank you so much for saying that. Sasha, You are a contributor on.
I know, I'm a segment. I think I'm a segment status by now, right?
Yes. Your segment is called Tell Us About the Law, Sasha. So you are working in D.C. for Lambda Legal, so there's a lot of stuff you get to track and participate in. So, you know, of course, it's a huge country with a lot of courts and a lot of levels, which are incredibly challenging to sort out. We've been doing this for a while, and I'm just sort of chipping away at how these courts are set up and who goes where and yada yada. And someday we're gonna lay all that out for everybody. We're gonna identify.
It'll be fun for the listeners.
We're gonna identify every single
Bruce
court in the country, one by one. We're gonna go through them all and what they do. So what is bubbling up right now that listeners may want to know about?
You know, there's a lot of different, you know, obviously issue areas and the LGBT world and people living with HIV world, but I think that what's probably most interesting probably for listeners is what's happening at the Supreme Court. You know, even though they only handle maybe 100 in some cases a year, if that, you know, the district courts and the circuit courts in the federal system handle, you know, tens of thousands of cases a year, you know, but the Supreme Court only handles like 100. So you get disproportionate amount of energy and interest, but, you know, their decisions are to hold, you know, a tremendous amount of weight too. And, you know, unfortunately, they're not, historically haven't been, you know, the guiding lights for the progressive movement. You know, some good decisions like Brown v. Board and Roe v. Wade, but there's also been some really terrible decisions, you know, and we don't need to go through those, but it's just deeply concerning, you know, that some of the cases that are coming up before the court that they might decide to take on LGBT issues are, you know, could have an impact, you know, on a lot of people's lives. So it's
Let's clarify just that point. Most courts cannot refuse what comes in front of them. That's correct. But the Supreme Court can say, we only have so much time, we're going to tackle these. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. It depends. There's, you know, sometimes a circuit court will, you know, not take an appeal for various reasons, or, you know, if there's a decision on the circuit court level, they might not take a, you know, what's called an en banc, you know, when the whole, you know, sometimes when a circuit court reviews a decision, it's just a panel of the, you know, entire court, and maybe two or three people. And then if they, you know, if a litigant doesn't win there, they might want to appeal to, you know, the full circuit court of appeals, but, you know, it's pretty rare. Yeah, so the Supreme Court's pretty choosy about which cases they'll take, and, you know, I think there are literally thousands of petitions that are filed every year, you know, that aren't granted, and, you know, the Supreme Court has to consider, you know, a lot of different factors when deciding to take a case. You know, one issue is if there's a conflict, you know, in the country and among the different courts on a specific issue, you know, they'll be more likely to take it, or if it involves a conflict between branches of government, you know, that's another situation where they might take a case.
And if my understanding is the Supreme Court doesn't need to provide an explanation. They can just say, we don't want to talk about this year, so we're just not going to. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. They'll just deny cert. They'll just list all the cases they're not taking, you know, without an explanation. You know, sometimes they do, but most often they don't. And I think it's usually pretty clear, you know, why they decided not to, but not always. That, you know, they get, you know, like, again, they only handle like 100 cases, but they get, you know, thousands of petitions. So it's pretty rare.
Do you think the Supreme Court itself as a body is immune to community pressure, to politicking, once they're in their room figuring it out, does public pressure matter, or does that have to happen sort of on a broader scale to sort of give a bigger context about what the nation might want? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, it does. It's a complicated question. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that I think that public pressure, you know, people, you know, making phone calls or sending them letters or, you know, social media campaigns, you know, I think that, you know, that happens, of course, you know, but I think it might be counterproductive in some situations, you know, when justices feel pressured, you know, to, you know, in that way. But I think that they're human beings, and I think that, you know, they, you know, you have a, like, especially Justice Roberts, you know, I think that there's a desire to, you know, protect the integrity of the court and its reputation, and to not be viewed as a, you know, a partisan body. They're not anyone's courts. Sorry, Trump. You know, they shouldn't belong to any political party. And I think there's, you know, that wish to remain, you know, have some degree of autonomy. But, you know, they are human beings, and I think that they do look at, you know, society's changes and in culture. And I think that the point I'm trying to make in a very long-winded way is that I think that the social issues, along with the legal issues, you know, it's good for social issues to progress at the same rate as some of the legal issues that go before the court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, you know, looking at marriage equality, you know, by the time that the court heard Obergefell v. Hodges, you know, there were a number of states that, you know, had, you know, removed the bans, you know, either through, you know, votes or through the courts. But more importantly, I think that the views on marriage equality had substantially changed in the years that led up to the decision. You know, one fear that we have, you know, I'm an openly trans person, is that, you know, some of our issues will get to the court before, you know, they've had an opportunity to, you know, understand who transgender people are, to have that conversation that needs to happen, you know, in the country. Before, you know, deciding, you know, the kinds of decisions that they might have to be deciding, you know, before that, you know, discussion has matured. So that's a concern for sure.
It seems to me that given the Supreme Court's makeup now, folks should be agitating for state policies. And I think that in some areas we can get complacent once the Supreme Court makes one kind of decision. And we let state law simply follow in its wake rather than actually being built. Does that make sense? I worded that poorly, but...
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great point, you know, and I think there's a lot of discussion about that that's happening now, you know, regardless of what the Supreme Court does or doesn't do, you know, the state law, you know, unless they, you know, go way overboard, you know, some kind of, you know, ruling state law would always protect, you know, LGBT folks on many, many different levels. And there is, you know, a whole lot of room to move equality forward, you know, on the state level. You know, Oregon's come a long way, but, you know, there's still, you know, a lot of policy opportunities, you know, on the state level there, you know, and in addition to the legislature, you know, there's also a lot of opportunity to move forward in the state courts, you know, in different places to advance the law, you know. So if we end up with a, you know, a Supreme Court that, you know, is decidedly partisan and it's going to, you know, issue terrible rulings, you know, some of the strategy might need to move to the state level for sure. But, you know, I as a policy person, you know, I do some litigation, but, you know, I you know, absolutely love policy for a lot of reasons. I feel like it's a good tool for, you know, public education, but it also doesn't have some of the risks and has a lot of rewards that litigation doesn't have. Litigation is the only option in a lot of places in the country where, you know, the political map is extremely conservative. But, you know, I've seen what you can do through policy in Oregon and California and other places, and, you know, I'm hoping to do some little bit of that, you know, in Maryland and some of the places around D.C. I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for digging into some of the different issue areas that, you know, aren't discussed as often but are rich for mining. But I think advocates are definitely seeing that across the board, and there's a lot of movement that I've seen
on the state policy front, for sure.
Wonderful. Sasha, thanks so much. Thanks for that you're going to renew your membership in just a couple of minutes. We would love to have.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
All right, thanks so much.
Thanks, Kevin. Good night, Portland.
Good night.
All right, we're back with Guinevere to talk about how you can support KBOO and all of the great work that so many folks are bringing to you.
Hey, Alan, that was quite a conversation. I don't know, Supreme Court, all of that stuff. Whew.
It's complex, and with Sasha, you know, we come back to these conversations and mm-hmm. chip away a little bit at a time. It's something that that folks can tune in on the Queerboo Hour, and we continue to try to follow, you know, specific cases or just uh-huh. sort of the general thrust of how the law is moving and mm-hmm. where how it's structured and where things are going. So.
Yeah, that idea of moving a little bit of a time, a little bit at a time is really helpful. People can check in on the radio and they hear a little bit about that. And, you know, it's interesting. I think we all care about what our Supreme Court is doing and where we're going. So I want to say a thank you to you for your efforts in putting on the show. And what was your guest name?
Sasha.
Yeah. And to Sasha for speaking out around that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy to do it. And, bringing this program preference to everyone is possible because of the volunteers who make this mm-hmm. station run and also because of the listeners who help support our work here. We need our listeners to support us.
Yeah, right? We really do. And if you aren't a member, you know, you can give us a call at 877-500-5266 and become a member. I mean, it's really easy. Everything is set up here. It's streamlined. It's easy. No problem. Or you can go to kboo.fm, hit the donate button, and donate that way and become a member. There's nothing like feeling like you're a part of something. Mm-hmm. I was saying a little bit about this before. It's like this is in Portland. We are right downtown, just off of Burnside. And, you know, you can come and see the station. You can touch it, feel it, see it, hear it, all kinds of things. So,
we would love folks' participation in all sorts of ways, either on the ground in the station or just letting your friends know what kind of programming we're doing here, what you hear, what you like, what sparks your interest and your passion and moves you.
Mm-hmm.
We want folks to be talking about the kind of programming. So let your friends know.
Right. It's like KBOO has been around for over 50 years now, and this is 100% community involvement. So it's like, you know, that's just an example of the power of the Portland area, Oregon. I'm not exactly sure how far we reach. I think it's pretty much all around Oregon. Isn't that right?
Yeah, there are other stations, I think, that mm-hmm. are transmitting our programming.
Yeah.
And we're through Southwest Washington, too. We're thinking of you folks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we try to include you, the Southwest Washington listeners, in our programming and in the kinds of topics we cover as much as possible.
Yeah. And so every little bit helps. We have some thank you stuff for becoming a member or doing donations. Our beautiful phone crew has all of that stuff on ready to tell you about it. So pick up your phone and dial 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm. And, look around the website. There is so many things on there.
Yeah.
All right.
Here's a little bit more of Spacer. Thanks so much, Guinevere. Thanks to Sonia.
Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, and Calculated Conversations coming up next.
Coming up next.
Yeah.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by New Cascadia Traditional, located at 1700 Southeast 6th Avenue. New Cascadia Traditional is open daily and provides a wide variety of bread with gluten-free options. Lunch was provided by Blackbird Pizza, located at 1935 Southeast Hawthorne Street, and open from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily. Blackbird also has a second location in North Portland located at 6214 North Interstate, which is open till midnight every day. Dinner was provided by Russell Street Barbecue located at 325 Northeast Russell Street. Russell Street Barbecue is a local woman-owned barbecue restaurant that has been in Northeast Portland for going on 16 years. Last year, they opened a second location at 42nd and Southeast Belmont Street. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
Tune in to KBOO on December 13th for a special day of radio programming in partnership with Green Hop, a Black